time tradition. Midday on 630 CHED with Courtney Theriault. 630 CHED. Edmonton's news. Today's talk.
Well, I hope it was a roller coaster of a weekend for you. Had the highs. Well, mostly just highs, right? Because that's the best part about the roller coaster. I hate it when it goes down. That's a little bit too much for my soul to handle as someone who has acrophobia, a fear of heights. But I do love that song. That song right there, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, their cover of the song Roller Coaster of Love from a cult classic film, 1996's Beavis and Butthead Do America. And I will tell you, I did not expect when I got off the airwaves Friday afternoon that I would start my show on Monday by talking about Beavis and Butthead. And yet here we are. And there is a method to the madness here, and I will explain it momentarily. But for those who might have missed it, part of the reason people, to some extent, have been talking about Beavis and Butthead this weekend. I can't imagine like how many times I'm going to say Butthead on this show today and be totally cool with it. Beavis and Butthead, of course, if you're not familiar with them, the iconic cartoon duo from the 1990s, basically headbangers on an MTV cartoon. Well, they made an appearance of sorts when Ryan Gosling hosted Saturday Night Live this week as the two characters. Essentially, their looks made things difficult for Kenan Thompson's scientist to be able to continue with the sketch on the show. Take a listen.
Professor, is there a problem?
Yeah. There's a gentleman in your audience who looks strikingly similar to Beavis from the cartoon Beavis and Butthead. It's just a little distracting.
I'm not familiar with that cartoon, but would it help if he moved seats?
Yeah, that might be a good idea. It's the gentleman in the blue shirt.
Yeah, so, yeah, the host of this show says that she was unfamiliar with Beavis and Butthead, and it turns out so too was my wife. She'd heard of Beavis and Butthead, but this was the first time that she'd actually seen them in the wild, even though these were just, as I said, actor versions of the cartoon characters. She did recognize the King of the Hill characters at the end of that segment, but I had to go into a whole information download for her on who these characters was, and it got me thinking about like this generational gap that exists on some things. Like Chet Nation, I'm curious, is there something that you've had to explain to your significant other or to your kids that you thought was common knowledge that somehow just did not get downloaded to those individuals? And you know, it was interesting because I did not expect my Saturday night to involve me talking about the origins of Cornholio with my wife. And lo and behold, that's where we kind of wound up. Part of this, too, also ties into an interesting little tidbit from Layla, who's the producer for Bryn Griffiths on the afternoons here. She posted a great tweet this weekend talking about her perspective coming from Vancouver to Edmonton and some of the things that she noticed, some of the things that really stood out for her, and a lot of really nice things. A glowing review for our city from Layla. But one thing on that list that really kind of caught my eye was she was talking about Purple City. Are you familiar with Purple City, Chet Nation? Jeff, technical producer, I see you nodding your head. I just want to see, are you familiar with Purple City?
I'm not actually familiar with Purple City. I'm nodding because the Beavis and I have lots of love for Beavis and Butthead, lots of time. In fact, in 1996, when it first was released, I went to the midnight premiere of that movie when it came out. It was absolutely fantastic. And if you haven't seen the new episodes, because they're actually putting a new season out on Amazon right now, they're fantastic. But Purple City, unfortunately, yeah, I don't know what that is.
Well, you know, and this is a question I put out on social media today, because it does seem like, again, there might be a bit of a generational divide on this. It seems that if you are in a certain age sector, you're familiar with this Purple City. Now, for those who might not be familiar with it, such as you, Jeff, I'll give you the quick 411 on this, or 311, I guess, because we're in Edmonton. Essentially what it is, it's this thing where you go down to the ledge grounds. And I'm not saying do this, but I'm just saying what it is. You go down to the ledge grounds, there are some very bright lights near the top of the ledge grounds. And if you do this at a certain time of night and you peer into the lights, these big bright lights for 30, 60 seconds, and then you lift your head back up, everything is purple.
Weird.
Yeah.
And that is an interesting one.
Yeah. And so this is a tradition that dates back, you know, looking at social media after I posted this, some folks saying they were doing this as far back as the early 1980s. And it's something that I was introduced to when I first moved back to the city around 2010, 2011. And I've had the opportunity to show it to a few people along the way. But it seems like something that no one talks about anymore, even though there is actually a music festival called Purple City Music Festival every year.
You know, and now that you've mentioned that, I'm going to have to go down and try this for myself because I'm really curious to see, like, so, like, the sky is purple when you're done? Or
yeah,
like,
well, the lights, the sky, the lights, everything that has a little bit of, like, a tangible sort of light to it takes on this purple hue. Hmm. So
that's interesting. I'll have to go check that out.
Well, again, it got me thinking, right? Because, I mean, you know, it seems like kids of a certain generation now aren't familiar with this. This is something that's been kind of lost to time. Just like how the idea of going to the end of the world down in Belgravia overlooking the North Saskatchewan River when it was just this pile of dirt and old cement pillars. And then they put in, $1.5 million to renovate that to make it safe. But it's lost its charm that way. So future generations are never going to really get to experience end of the world. So it got me thinking, folks. What do you think? Is there something, whether it's an Edmonton thing, as I mentioned, like Purple City or End of the World, or is it, you know, maybe a pop culture thing like Beavis and Butthead, which I had to kind of explain to my wife a little bit this weekend when they were referenced on SNL. Is there something that you thought was just known by everyone that you've taken to your kids, to your spouse, to your friends, and it just leaves them scratching their heads, and you're like, how is this not common knowledge?
I'm going to give you one here quick, okay. Courtney, because I've fallen down the YouTube rabbit hole of watching reaction videos, right? I don't know if you know what these are, but they're basically people watching old movies or listening to old music and reacting to them. And the number of people that say they have not seen Back to the Future shocks me.
Yeah.
Right? I thought everybody's seen Back to the Future. Even if you've been born in the last like 10, 15 years, like that's just a classic that I figured everybody would have seen at least once or twice, but
you know
apparently
what?
Not.
My wife hasn't seen it.
That's what I mean. Like who knew, right? I just assumed like you're born, you live for a couple years, someone puts a copy of that in your hand and you're off, right?
Or at the very least you come across it on TBS or Turner Classic Movies or something like that while you're flipping through the channels,
something.
Right?
Something, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Well, let us know. Already some thoughts coming in on this, and we'll check in with a few of your texts coming up throughout the rest of the show. Of course, if you happen to, you know, follow politics, love it or hate it, you might know that today is carbon tax rebate day. Albertans will receive the highest amount nationwide. It averages about $1,800 for a family of four. But full disclosure, I didn't receive my rebate today, but there is a reason for that. Ahead, we're going to look at who gets what and when, and we'll also examine what's in this week's federal budget that could help us or hurt us.
This is the all-new Midday on 630 Chat with Courtney Theriault.
A busy week for check writing in Ottawa. Monday is carbon tax rebate day, and the feds are set to table their budget on Tuesday. So a lot's to dive into and to make dollars and sense of this all. We're joined by friend of the show, economist at Concordia University, Masha Lander. Masha, thank you for joining us once again.
My pleasure.
So, of course, this is a day that some people look forward to. Some people are completely unaware exists. Let's try and make, like I said, dollars and cents of this carbon rebate day, because we know that it is a hot button topic. It's arguably the most hot button topic when it comes to Canadian politics. So who gets paid what on today?
Well, it's a little bit hard to do as a calculation, but essentially it looks at, first things first, you had to file your income taxes for 2022 now. It'll be updated when it comes for 2023. But you had to have filed your income taxes. It has nothing to do with whether you got a refund then or whether you underpaid your taxes. You just had to file. That's step one. Step two is it's based on the income that was reported. It's based on your family status, married or single, based on how many kids you have. And then it's just a mathematical calculation that says, all right, here you're going to get this much money, and they direct deposit it. And so it can be anywhere from around $100 per quarter up to about $400 per quarter. And so that means testing is essentially trying to get at that lower income people might not be carbon consumers as much as higher income people. And then once you're beyond a certain threshold, I think you drop off entirely on the grounds of you earn enough anyway.
Well, I do typically get it back, and I think for the most part, my quick back of the envelope calculation suggests I'm maybe just a little bit ahead of where I would be without it. Not any great shakes, but obviously, as you mentioned, it depends on where you fall on the economic spectrum. One thing we do know is that the carbon tax did go up April 1st, but as I understand it, there was a correlation with that in terms of the rebates as well.
Yes. And so there's always the inflation adjustment in a lot of these government programs. It's just built in naturally anyway. And so if they raise the thresholds on where we cap out on EI or CPP or the thresholds for moving up in higher brackets, they're also going to raise these as well. That's just keeping things in line with cost of living.
So in terms of those who are going to be receiving the rebate, once their taxes are all in order and everything, what's the percentage of people who will be getting something back?
Oh, the vast majority of Canadians get something back. And you could even go so far as to say that the majority of Canadians get more back than what they're actually paying in the form of carbon, which is the terrible misselling of the federal government. I think they completely blew the PR aspect of selling the policy. But the typical Canadian in each income range should be getting back more than what they're paying in. It's just that they're paying in every time they go to the gas pump or every time that they consume something that has carbon in it. When they get it back, it says a lump sum. But if you kind of dollar for dollar work it out, most people are net recipients, and the vast majority of Canadians get something.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say this has kind of been the new Coke of branding for political purposes. This all coming, of course, as we are expecting the budget tomorrow in Ottawa. We're getting a sense that it's going to be a tight budget. This despite the fact that we've seen nearly $40 billion worth of new spending and loans announced over the last few weeks, coming at a time when we did a poll here with our colleagues at Global News, an Ipsos poll that found that rising cost of living is the top priority for Canadians. What's your sense as to what we're going to see in this budget? Is there going to be any relief in that regard?
There might be. I think we're going to hear, though, that there's higher taxes, at least in part, to pay for some of these programs. Remember, too, that all of these programs are exactly like you said. They're announcements. They're not novelty checks that are being handed over in the moment that they're presenting the budget either. So some of these might fail to materialize. Sometimes they're just repackaging of programs that have already been promised. And so while it looks like new spending, it's not necessarily that. They're going to run a deficit this year. I don't think that that's a bad thing, although it'll be portrayed that way. The economy will start to grow this year, and so with revenues rising, some government spending falling, there should be space for their programs without adding significantly to the deficit. As far as cost of living relief, I don't think it's going to be there, and I think that that's just because Canadians are not truly understanding what inflation means. If the average price is rising, when inflation falls, it just means the average price isn't rising as fast, but it's still rising. So the issue is, will our incomes increase fast enough to keep pace with those rising prices? And that's a problem of productivity, and the government can do something about that. I just don't think that they're at the crisis point where they're ready to start trying to boost productivity. They'll talk about it, but I don't think that they have a formulated plan. But that said, I don't think any of the parties have a formulated plan either.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to talk about a crisis point, I think it's probably safe to say that the Liberals are in that at that crisis point, based on polling in terms of the federal numbers. And you would think that maybe there would be a push to throw out an election budget, even though there would still be an election budget next year, to try and bolster their sagging fortunes. But this, I think, speaks to the fact that, you know, we really do need to get our financial house in order, don't we?
Yeah, the financial house, again, it's important, but I think that the point that it's really showing strains is that lagging productivity. The Bank of Canada actually highlighted that about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and that to me is much, much more important, because I think everything flows from that. If productivity continues to remain flat or falling, then it makes it difficult for our incomes to rise, our standard of living to rise, to keep up with inflation and to keep up with rising cost of living. It makes it more difficult for the government to raise revenue, because our incomes aren't rising fast enough, and in a progressive system, more and more of our money should be allocated to more and more taxes. There's just a whole host of issues. The thing with productivity is that election or no election, that takes years and years to show results. Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, based on polling, it's very unlikely this government's going to be around next year. So if they start implementing things to boost productivity, it's the government 5 to 10 years out that's going to be able to take credit for something that was put in place now. I think they realize, why should we do it if we're not going to be around to see the benefit from it? That's a little bit cynical, but hey, that's the way politics goes. But the problem is that because we are seeing productivity flat to falling, it makes it almost impossible to see how we're going to balance the budget next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if our standard of living is falling and our tax base is being thinned out.
Now, do you think that we will start to see that those numbers, that productivity kind of shift going forward? Because I know that you take a look at what we were expecting here for the GDP real growth, we're actually seeing those numbers a little bit higher than expected. Are we going to see maybe, you know, those tailwinds kind of pick things up?
I don't think so. This is that might be a short-term blip. The long-term trend over the last 40 years, if you go back to the late 1980s, we were maybe around 90% of American productivity levels. We're now below 70% of their levels. And it's not because American productivity has been skyrocketing. It's they've been showing slow and marginal increases, where ours is flat and falling. The real issue in Canada that's holding us back is not the GDP growth exercise. It's the lack of competition. And I know that you and I have spoken about airlines, banks, cell phones, farmers, grocers, internet service providers, telecom companies, like you name it. Canada is awash in a lack of competition, and the lack of competition doesn't drive innovation and fear and productivity gains the way that a more competitive society would. So I think that there's a broader rethink about how do we create genuine competition in a lot of Canadian industries, and maybe have to sacrifice some long-standing Canadian companies if they have to face foreign competition and they can't stand up to it.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong in the sense that I think when it does come to that competition angle, that we are mad as heck and many of us aren't ready to take it anymore. Masha, always a pleasure chatting with you on the show.
Anytime.
There you go. That's Masha Lander. He's an economist at the Concordia University. Kind of dipping his toes in a couple of topics today, talking about this being carbon rebate day. Did you get yours, by the way, Shed Nation? 780-496-0063. Would love to hear yes or no on that front. And we're also talking about tomorrow's budget, what we are expecting from that. Does sound like it's going to be a tight budget, one that is not going to likely deliver a lot of savings for Canadians. And so that certainly coming at a time when, as I mentioned, the Liberals' polls, their future does appear to be sagging, and so they're not going to be spending in spite of that they are going to apparently hold the line. So it'll be very interesting to see what does come out of that once we do have the specifics. Hey, you know what? Flashback with me to March of 2020. Remember how people thought they could get rich by investing in toilet paper and Lysol wipes? Well, many people felt the same about RVs. Well, now you bought them for travel during the pandemic, and then you would sell it for a profit. That was the plan, a foolproof plan. Except it turns out that wasn't the case. Ahead, we'll explore who and why, rather, it's becoming a buyer's market for recreational vehicles.